Oh, it isn't.
Hey, Kurt. How it goes. Hey guys.
Not too bad.
How's
Hey.
hello, hello. sorry to be late. Coming from another fun meeting. So let's see here.
Yeah, within 5 minutes, it's all good, right?
I guess, yeah.
Plus or minus.
So Ian is working on the upgrade today. They ended up approving everything. So thanks for all of your efforts and getting all the bug fixes and all of the configuration and wording changes and stuff. I think they were excited about that. So that is underway. Is it just it's just us four today? Yeah, I think that's all that we will expect. I am pulling up a message real quick that I want to reference in regard to ZFL, which we're gonna have to start shifting a little bit of now that we've gotten the R4 stuff out the door. We will be, there are still outstanding work that we owe Trove, but I think that we will probably try to confirm like a shared understanding of what we actually have to do and also what a timeline might be like that's reasonable and that can fold into other work that we need to do for the rest of the reshare community. So we're kind of at a, I mean, of course, like there are a handful of things that are still outstanding. Like, I think that they're going to be wanting to chase the do not send patron details to the suppliers, pretty important to them. So I think that's one that, we'll definitely get out for them. But I think we're going to be sort of out of the, immediate weeds of doing everything, Trove. So, that being said, I guess let's do updates and then we can talk about what is next. Kurt, I'm down at your section, so why don't we start there?
Yeah. So I'm working currently on 165, which is the patron detail stuff. I've actually seems to be working in my integration tests. I do want to do just a little bit more checking to make sure that things are how we expect. I will have to add a new setting. I'll have to, add the UI stuff for that as well. But otherwise, it seems pretty straightforward. Hopefully it should be completed today.
Oh, cool. That's fantastic. They're gonna be like super excited about that.
Definitely.
So just like a setting for expose patron information to supplier for purposes of full slip or something like that.
Right. So basically, if the setting, if you don't have the setting on, then it just won't send patron information when it sends the request to the supplier.
Is that a tenant setting?
Yes.
It's the only time we got right now. It would be nice to have some sort of consortial setting, but
Yeah, I think it like I talked a little bit with Kurt. Like I think that other people will be interested in this, so I didn't want to tie it to an existing like setting that was kind of specific to Trove's setup. And so I
Oh, for
think
sure. For sure.
And like you noted, I think in the last meeting, Jason is that like somebody, I think Palsy uses it for their pull slips. So I think the only thing I was worried about, Kurt, is that we still need to send through like this electronic address, but I don't think that's even in the patron details, so I assume that's like not a problem, just for like document delivery and stuff. But we'll test that once it's
I mean, I guess if there are specific fields that we need to make sure that we are not sending, then I guess we should make sure that we just zoom in on those. But yeah.
Oh, what? I thought the way things work is we send a URL and that gets emailed in the requester side, no?
Oh, so like this doesn't, well, I wonder if this is important more for the like when the supplier is an ISO partner.
I think they, I wonder if it's just that they didn't worry about it because it is not a patron thing in their particular case, but that maybe it shouldn't actually be, there's no need to send it because the assumption is that the requester is responsible for communicating with patron.
Yeah, I just, it depends what that address usually is or is stored as. Like, if that's the patron email address, then the setting to not expose patron data probably shouldn't be passing that along, even if it is an intro.
Right.
But is that
Yeah,
what
I
that
hear.
electronic address is for, that particular one? What's the larger container for it?
This is just in the electronic address. And so it's outside of the patron info, like.
Okay. So then
But
I guess
what?
we assume it's an address for the requesting library, maybe.
Yeah, like that's where it is on the ISO message. You're like, where is it on the request object? Or like, where does that come from?
Let's see if that is requesting user. It's in like when we're creating a request, this is the delivery email. So I don't think we don't need it when it's reshare to reshare, but I am curious if we need it when requesting with an Alma site.
Now, didn't the issue say that they were not worried about the email address, like because it was going to be an institutional
Well,
book anyway, or I
that's
got
the
like,
case for Trove, yeah.
just put an
But
eye towards making it as broadly useful and also doing what it says.
yeah, like for other reshare customers, like that email would be specific to the requesting user,
Right.
and not this like system email or like library institutional email. Trying to think about if I'm just complicating this for no reason, but like the setting just needs to be like, I want it to be clear, like what we're preventing from being sent. Like, I guess maybe I'd have to test that with Alan to see if he would be able to d deliver a document if we didn't send that, the requesting user email. Like,
Oh,
if,
that's interesting. I wonder how is the assumption at Alma that that is a request that that's the user? Because I thought that they sent the email to the requesting library and they did some processing before sharing with the page. Did I misremember that from those conversations?
I think that they send an email directly to the patron, or like I think it's automated. I don't think there's staff intervention
From the supplier.
from Alma's supply. No, as Alma's requester. Oh.
So that would suggest then that there's two emails, one from the supplier to the requester, and one from the requester to the patron.
Yes, right. What am I looking at here? This is like not where I want to be. Let me. I guess this would be if I was requesting from Alan, right? Like, I just want to see like something for Al. They must have been testing with him yesterday. In the. I wonder if it's also in here. Deanna. Actually, I don't see the email here, which I would have thought would be in there. Okay. Requested delivery info. So we send the physical address and we send this electronic address, which I'm just not sure if this would be, if this electronic address is the patron address and if it's required.
I mean, the patron intro field has a separate address field within it that's different from the request to delivery info address field. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure how they're using it, of course, but I guess it is not. I suppose it's separate from like the patron address, presumably.
Okay, well, I guess let's try it with just not sending the requesting user email address, and then we'll see if we can actually fill a copy in both directions with the Alma site. 'Cause I don't think it's a problem with reshare to reshare, but maybe
Obviously,
I'm
we have to send
confused.
something to Alma, right? They have to get an address, but there is probably needs to be a clear distinction between the requesting email address for the organization that's configured into the directory and anything tied to the patron. And we should just be really clear about what it is we're sending where.
Yeah, it's a little confusing that this is I wonder if I logged into Sydney with my I don't remember what my
Oh, it's confusing because the user may in fact be the customer or the trove or something.
Yeah, like I just wonder if like if I submitted a request, would it be with this generic account, like, or with my test account? No, the delivery email. Oh, this is a configured. So it doesn't matter that I'm logged in as my user. This is the system email. Okay. I don't know how this would work in regular old reshare right now. My brain is not.
It's not always that email, is it? That particular email address that we see there?
Well, it is for this tenant,
This tenant,
for,
yeah.
yeah, it's always for Sydney. Like I have programmed the institutional email address for Sydney to be this.
Gotcha.
At yeah.
But that's
And
not.
so yeah, like in if we looked at like a production tenant, like there it would be their system, like the system email address for WRPH's,
Yeah.
you know. Whatever there, oh, maybe he's in the middle of doing stuff and I shouldn't mess in here, but yeah, like this is their system email address, so it doesn't matter who's logged in, it'll all get delivered here. But I feel like that's very trovey. I guess what I could try to do is set
Yeah,
up
it gets super, it's probably unnecessarily confusing because Alma happens to use email as their delivery mechanism. But almost all interpretations of ILL of resource sharing I've seen seem to kind of prefer that the material gets bounced back to the requesting library so they can validate it, or at least have the option to validate it.
Right.
And in that situation, you'd want to put, I guess you would have, imagine a situation where some library, requesting library, would just be like, yeah, just send it directly to the patron. But then you are really exposing PII to the supplier, and you should have a big fat warning. It does seem like, in the spirit of how Reshare has approached this, that it is the requesting Reshare tenants that gets the document, gets that URL, and passes it on to the patron. And then you can decide whether you want to automate that or not, right? So if we are interoperating with Alma and their preferred mechanism is email, I almost feel like the right approach, like if we just could do this perfectly, would probably be for Reshare to actually receive that email and connect it to the request on the requesting side so that you always have a handle on the document on the requesting side, whether we're using Odyssey or at one of our JSON's file stash or an email, that we sort of have a similar workflow where you can get at that document on the requesting side and you can own the conversation with the patron.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's where you want to be, right? Yeah.
So do we just need to make sure that this address is actually the tenant address and not like tied to the patron or?
Sounds right.
Well, Kurt, this sounds like something that will be fun to explore. I guess, and if we looked at like a well, this was probably a bad one, but like it do I don't know. Yeah, they have a main email address. So I guess that's, we would just want to make sure we are sending, in this case, in regular reshare, the main email address, which is what we kind of are calling the system address in Trove, which they've, every user sends a request from, since they don't have this entry, but they have like essentially the same thing in there. I don't know. Like Melbourne has this is their primary email address. We just have it configured to be the Trove one.
Right.
But I think that would correspond to
Now,
this main email address.
does that throw a wrench in things for how it would work for Palissy and stuff? So they are expecting the patron information. So when you have that setting the other way, so you're saying, Kurt, that there's another place for patron email that would be the right
Well,
place to send that anyways.
I get like, I don't know. I trying to figure out what. So like, we have this delivery address, field in the patron request, which is what I think is getting populated by the email field, but it's not specifically a patron email address, although it might be sometimes used as such.
That's kind of what I'm wondering, yeah. Like how is Palissy treating that? And if we stop ever sending the patron email in that, and then only send the patron email in the other place where it's explicitly the patron email, only if the setting is activated to allow that. What would be the implications of that for Palissy's workflow, if any? Like maybe they're not even putting the email address in their pull slips, and so this is all kind of moot for them.
Yeah, I doubt that they're including a patron email address in the pull slip.
Because, like, theoretically, there's really no situation under which the supplier should be talking to the patron ever, anyways. So,
I mean, we're not actually populating the patron specific address field when we make our ISO messages. The
right, but it sounds like we're putting what might be the patron's email into the delivery address field, which shouldn't have that ever really. Like
Right.
even if the setting is activated to allow sending of patron information, if that's what that email is, we're currently putting it in the wrong place, no? Like there's kind of also a bug here, albeit
Maybe,
not
I mean,
really
I guess
sure.
it depends on what we can, like, when how are they using the field that we put there in the create patron request form or however it gets populated when it comes in from.
Yeah, like oh, so it's stored on the patron request as delivery address,
Yes.
kind of thing. Yeah. Which you probably wouldn't be configuring on a per request basis, anyways, in most circumstances. Yeah.
We could try to hook up Sydney to the test NSIP, the test Folio NSIP, and link like my Folio user account, and then do like turn on NSIP and try it with like a real user instead of the configuration that we have in place for Trove and see what gets passed. If that is helpful to see, like how it would behave for other reshare users.
I could also just look at the the NSIP lookup patron method and see what it's populating when it pulls in patron information.
Okay. Well, you thought this was going to be done today, and then we had to throw a wrench into it. Okay. Well, do you feel, Kurt, like you have some like direction on what you are going to explore here as you continue this, or do you want to?
Yeah, I think I can at least do some initial explorations and then sync back up with you and see where we want to move with it.
Sorry, this is disgusting, but my cat just puked under my desk, and so I'm like, what is happening? And I needed
Also
to
distracting, yeah.
yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, what?
Yeah.
I
No, but
yeah.
I was just saying that I think I can at least do some initial investigation and then just sync back up with you and we can kind of determine the course from there, what
Okay.
direction we want to move with it.
I mean it's entirely if it's actually just coming from the delivery address on the request, and it's not specifically patron associated. I mean, that's
Yeah, I mean
probably
that's the
reasonable just to
simplest
leave it as it is.
interpretation.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just like have that as like a future thing maybe like de-emphasize that a bit in the interface. Like, is it listed as a required field on the patron edit form, for example?
On the patron, I'm sorry, on the what did you ask?
On the request, like on the form where we, sorry, on the request for patron edit.
Yeah, so this user would like would be looked up and have an email associated with it, but it's not like in regular reshare.
Oh, so it's not on the form at all. So we are looking it up. Yeah, where does it even come from normally, I guess?
Well, this would be from NSIP. So we have NSIP shut off for in Sydney, and so it's
No, but that's where the user comes from. But what I'm asking is, where does the thing that we're putting into the delivery email
Oh.
come from? Because if it comes from the patron information sent by NSIP, then our new setting to turn off sending of patron information isn't really turning it all the way off, is it? Because it's still getting sent, albeit in sort of a semi-generic wrong-ish place.
I mean,
And that
I
doesn't
guess.
mean we have to fix that for Trove. We could make a separate issue to be like, oh, setting doesn't fully handle the email aspect of this to be done whenever kind of thing, because it's not like we're putting it out to Palissy tomorrow and they're using it that way anyways. But just something to keep track of, I think, is really all it is.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like we could always like tackle those as two separate issues.
Yeah, like for example, it might be more reasonable for Kurt to spend time on ZFL stuff than dig further into this if it's handling the immediate need, right? For example. Yeah. I mean,
Right.
I think it does make sense, I think, to spend a few minutes just seeing what the NSIP lookup is populating, and see if that's populating the delivery address email, just so we kind of know. But it might make sense just to break that out into a future issue, just, so we don't lose track of it, but, it
Exactly,
might be beyond
exactly.
the scope
It's
of
good
what
to
we
know
want to talk about now.
where this comes from now that we're thinking of it to be like, yeah, especially if we start making confident statements about where this system does what with patron information, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and are you working on IL Dev 108 right now as well, or like where what's going on with this one? I know I think this one's done, but
I had started scratching the surface on that again yesterday, when I changed gears to 165. I think it's still happening. I think the main issue that we're seeing is that we don't see incoming ISO messages get logged when a request first hits the system, for the supplier side. So that, I think, it's not crucial because, we get it in the broker, but it's still not great,
oh, that's what this is for? Yeah, that is super like confusing to me not to see the ISO message on the supplier side.
So I would definitely like to have them there and to find, what the issue with the database stuff is causing it. But it's one of those very slippery things where you to get down to the magic of Hibernate and find out just exactly what's going on there. So.
Okay, I see. Okay, I think it makes sense since you've already started in this to keep after that too, once however you want to finish these, but or work on them is good. I think this one's done too. I asked Ian if he was gonna pull any further logs to check, but I think that we're probably good for now on this one, so.
Look it up.
Jason, how are things going?
They're going fine. I did some fiddly UI stuff. We talked a lot yesterday, but of interesting aspect is the rest of the group that there's now going to be a dollar sign beside the requests that have a cost. And that seems to work all right. And there's now a filter where you can filter by requests with non-zero cost. And that also seems
That's
to work.
super cool. That's just neat, really super cool, a neat tweak. Nice job just kind of nudging that in there. How does it work when there's both a number of is that
Look
a
at
number?
the $1 there. And if it's important, it'll be red and there'll also be an exclamation.
Gotcha.
So yeah, if we added a well, I'm not sure. Oh, because Let me see if I
Do you have a symbol for Rush Express as well? Rush Anvil Express?
We talked about it, but it seemed like it was going to get like this is already kind of pushing some sort of boundary of absurdity, and that I think if it's like 7 exclamation mark dollar sign plus plus, it would just be like absurd.
No, I'm with you. I do think that the day you were not there, Mallory, one thing they raised was that it was a little challenging, or rather they missed not having some way to highlight the urgent issue of the requests. And I guess you do have that, yeah.
There is like
And you have to sort of go and click on those every time to see them.
yeah, like Express are the ones that are like probably the most urgent to act on, and we can filter by the service level. These ones have conditions, but look, see, Seb, this is kind of what I think, Jason, you can all not even really see it, but this one has
Oh, this last night is invisible.
oh no.
yeah, the dollar sign is I didn't notice this until
Apologize.
right now.
Get ended
Oh
on
no.
missing intact.
The badge component doesn't seem to support, or maybe it's just that field is overflowing. Well, that's unfortunate. We were so
But
close.
I think that's what we mean though, like with the plus plus for Rush and the plus for Express is like this could get like I guess we'd need like a separate column or something
Well,
maybe
we would just
to
make it wider, but I think what we need to do is have a service level column and use and then actually solve the column picker issue, and then users can choose to have the service level.
yeah. The other thing they suggested was an ability to sort requests by time remaining before expiry or something, because that would make the urgent ones pop to the top anyway. And they even,
Well, that's still another column. It would be expiry time instead of service level.
I mean, you can combine them, I guess, into one field with like a letter code first for the service type, and then expiry time after that. So you could sort of buy them in some sensible way. They even suggested that they were willing to give up one, but these are not meant to be configurable at this point,
Well,
right?
that's just it. That's what I was saying. There's a column picker thingy that Folio has introduced.
Okay.
And because it came in advance of any, like, we have some actual recent effort for per user preferences,
Yeah.
but that didn't exist and hasn't existed for a surprisingly long time. And so your column settings, instead of being persisted to your backend user, are persisted to your browser profile in local storage,
Yeah.
which would potentially work fine if you're using the same browser for your job every day. But if you're using a kiosk kind of situation, you would probably wind up having to set your column settings on every workstation that you wind up using, which could be not ideal, but at least they'd have the option.
Right.
But yeah, that's where that is at now. We've actually had an issue since at least 2 years. Maybe it was 2021. I think I saw it said I know I found it yesterday, like Mallory, to implement the component, because I had seen it happening when it was being discussed on the Stripes call.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's been in there now for a while and is something we could use. I think Eddie actually took a stab at it, but left a PR hanging around. I can't remember why or what discussion happened around that.
I wonder if we can, if there's any way. I hesitate to say it because I feel like the community is so far behind us in a lot of things at the moment, that that's as we talked about earlier, Mallory, but whether this is, it's tempting to get into a mode of doing Bessemer just for Trove, And might this be the at the level of thing where we would be it would be better to run it through a community process and get
Oh
the
yeah, for sure.
key in for
I'm
that
not saying we
process?
do this right now. Yeah, I'm just saying it's like in order to plan for what we want to tell Trove when they inevitably ask us about this kind of stuff, if we have some kind of an overview of the way that we would prefer to handle this.
I
And
mean,
yeah, I think that's probably what it's like, a new column and then to have the column picker thingy. And as to what that new column is, Smeeze can decide what they think makes the most sense. Another thing would be if we're sorting by time remaining, that's something we can do. If we have a priority column, because the standard has a bunch of absurd synonyms that it's also just a controlled vocabulary. So there isn't an explicit ordering. So I have no idea if rush, express, or urgent should come first. I mean, probably one of them. But the sort order is ambiguous, and we currently have no mechanism for representing it to the system. But we do, I think, have a field to filter them by, because we don't want to show all of them because they don't make sense as a complete set. And so maybe the order you put things into that setting, because it's just a comma delimited string, maybe that could also be the ordering for the sort order, and we could implement it that way.
But the expiry time is different than the configuration for Express and Rush. Is that right?
Express expire after 2 hours and rush is 24.
So at least at the consortial policy level, there is a clear distinction between Rush and Express. Even if the standard doesn't distinguish, it's going to be something that the parties agree to, right? And so the consortium is the most natural place where you can have that agreement.
But
Absolutely.
it's that thing we'll need to store somewhere, and then may vary between systems. And so, since we store the list of which ones we show, that we might actually just use that same thing to also encode the ordering.
It might actually
Then,
be
if we're just
apps.
using expiry time, though, that's moot. Like we don't have to sort them.
It might make sense to I wonder if there's some value in having it be part of the conversation with the Silts group, the implementers group, whether there should be a suggested standard interpretation of those fields, because it does seem a little useless to define them, but not to define any semantics at all. And this seems like a good basis for some type of implementation profile or supplemental spec or something.
Well, in the ISO thingy, it does actually call out some of these as being specific to Australia.
Right, I know. Yeah, I remember.
It's like normal and then standard, but standard parentheses Australia in the clarification field. Just like, which they actually renamed a core anyways. So even Australia doesn't stick to Australia's standards.
It's not great when you get this sort of infusion of local practices rather than people trying to converge on a shared practice.
So I think there should be, even if they decide to retain the Australia specific ones in their standard, to have some sense of these are the actual core ones that are standard.
Fun.
Well, it's an interesting picture into how, I mean, it's bad committee work, right? When they just sort of flow in there and people don't stop and think about the implications. And I mean, it's perfectly fine to have, I guess, the shared registry include things that are specific to Australia, but in some ways, helpful. Like we could sort of encourage implementers of ISO to support if it's an open code list anyway. It doesn't need to be in the standard, I guess. And the things
Yeah,
that
exactly.
it should be things that have shared semantics. But I can also see a situation where a particular committee, depending on who's in it and who leads it, is going to be like, oh yeah, let's pull it in. That's fine. That's
Especially if you've been going around in circles about it in a meeting on a Friday afternoon for 2 hours. So it's like, sure, just put them all in there, whatever.
oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've been in standards groups like that, where you can come down differently, and some of it becomes political. Like you want to make that one dude happy by giving him a win in the committee that he can take back to his stakeholders, and you want those stakeholders to be supporting the standards.
And the other thing he wanted was really annoying, so we'll give him this one.
Yeah. Politics.
So fun.
Well, we can bring this into the conversations for the 27 spec. Right? We can try to encourage the team to get it right.
Yeah, I feel like the 2027 spec has a lot of hopes and dreams like associated with
It
it.
will
But I kind of
feature.
like that as a direction to like properly use the open codes, especially as we're moving towards Resharp being kind of happening at a consortium granularity instead of at that individual library granularity,
Yeah.
that each consortium can have its own open code vocabulary, but when they're dealing between each other, would be expected to use the most standard possible standard codes because they can't rely on the other ones. And that just seems to make sense. And so from that lens, hopefully what actually does end up in the standard can be something everyone wants to agree that there is going to be legible to each other internationally.
You can, although ideally you want a request to be able to fail over from your consortium to a neighboring consortium without you needing a lot of intervention. And so if you, I mean, one way to approach that would be if you stipulate a non-core, well, I don't know what you call a non-core the service level or something. Do you dumb that down automatically when you fail over to a neighboring consortium that doesn't have a.
I think you would need to, right? Like if you have a non-standard vocabulary
Well, else
and
you
you
have
want to
strategy.
communicate to a different system, you have to
Right.
have some kind of a mapping or whatever.
Or else you have to demand a staff review and say, hey, I want to send this to some other consortium, but they don't have this they don't have this particular extended value.
Yeah. Could work.
But it sure gets fiddly. It would be easier if people were just like could just accept that there was a the there they are a huge benefits to just having a some shared convention set.
But that would be the process, right? Like I think that would be part of the road. Like if there's a reluctance to just pick something and do it,
Sure.
then to have them keep their special snowflakiness within the consortium and then having to fall back to manual intervention if it needs to escape the boundaries and to actually not have those weirdly specific things enshrined in the standard anymore would be a step in the right direction. And then it wouldn't probably take that long of them having to deal with this stuff manually to realize, you know, maybe we don't want that in here. Maybe we could just use the standard, or so we can just use normal instead of standard.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been trying to talk to the Trove guys too about sort of the benefits of not going around and remapping or renaming code values and other types of things because it will bite them in the butt when they interoperate, even just with Alma. And I think getting Alma into the mix helps because there's clearly a cost. There's kind of there's a semantic or friction cost involved if you go and tune the way that reshare presents to the user so much, it gets so far away from the standard that you don't get good semantic interoperability with people that are using other tools. And I guess in retrospect, if we had thought in those terms, if I thought in those terms, I might have asked, and I don't feel like we have walked, I feel like we are somewhat in the vicinity of the trams, but I think I had a mindset when we started work on this, when Philip started work on the UX, that we should go with the best possible user experience and then map that onto the standard as best we could. And now that we're sort of in this interoperability game, there's maybe a clearer value in trying to align with the with standard terminology. So on the one hand, I mean, you can kind of admire the ALMA approach, which is just to bring a raw exposure of every single thing that the standard is capable of, except the ones we actually want, like but there's something smart in that in some ways. I don't know, it's interesting. Pros and cons. Sorry, I didn't mean
Well,
to.
and it really is very index data. Like that's kind of our role is to we're very caught up in standards. And we're trying to bring these organizations together to have some of this committee-driven idealism become something that's actually pragmatically useful in reality.
And to try to, I think, support the people we work to by carrying water between the standards process and some engineering and the customer needs or the user needs.
I wonder if this might be helped significantly by Trove dealing with literally anyone else. Especially convenient if it happens to happen via reshare. But even if the other party is exclusively using ALMA, so long as we're using ISO 18626 to talk to them, that might help clarify a lot of this stuff. Because I don't know that we have a lot of kind of interoperation, although that's what Crosslink's supposed to be all about, right?
Well, I think we do now, right? And that's not going to go away. So we're dealing with ALMA, and OCLC is being bullied to the table as well, it sounds like. So there's going to be so the whole conversation that we will be part of for the 27 spec is going to be, I think, heavily informed by these experiences that we have right now. I think it'll be part of it, like constantly is my expectation in a way that it probably hasn't been so much before when it's been more theoretical.
But is it concrete for Trove yet? Like, are they thinking about how they want to work with, say, New Zealand or whatever?
No, their heads down, just getting this thing to work and keeping their partners from fleeing.
Yeah.
But it'll come, hopefully, when New Zealand, I mean, it'll be great to see New Zealand come to the table or Western Australia if they go with us.
Yeah, have you heard anything about that? Because technically they were supposed to like go live on a system like November 1st or something. So I'm assuming they picked somebody, or if they didn't, I don't know what they're expecting, but
I don't think anyone's heard anything.
well, wow. That's pretty, well, the timeline will just have to adjust if they don't make a decision in time, but kind of interesting.
Let's ask Sarah one of these days.
Yeah, I assume she would have let us know, but if she had heard anything, but I will definitely ask her because it's curious.
First, I have to go in like 8 minutes. So I should probably try to wrap up my little bit of this. That seems like a bug that we obviously need to address, that thing overflowing. Because I was just so happy to do it without needing any CSS that I was just trusting that the CSS was working because I was using the components, but maybe not in that combination. So hopefully it just needs me to tell the column to be a bit wider and it'll sort out, but I will confirm that. Otherwise, that has an accessibility issue. There is
This
an
one.
annotation there of the no the badges with the exclamation and the dollar sign and the number.
Okay.
They're a little bit obscure, and so the previous code there was using this facility called REL label, which is actually typically used for form elements and would allow screen readers to provide extra context for what's happening in the UI when it's going through and dictating to someone that can't necessarily clearly see everything. And that turns out not to have been passed through because the badge component just ignores it. And so there's a long thread over on the OLF Slack, which in the process of trying to show Mallory, I have now convinced her to join the OLF Slack, so that's good. That I pointed that out, and they were like, "Oh, that's the wrong tool." Okay, well, what's the right tool? And then we kind of went back and forth and arrived at the fact that there is a CSS class that's global in Stripes for elements that should be available only to screen readers and not displayed visibly. And so the end result, and then there's another one for something that isn't to be announced by screen readers. And so the end result is going to try to be to lump that in there so that there's some additional context announced with it. So instead of two exclamation dollar sign, or hopefully not two factorial, it actually just would say two unread messages needs attention or something like that. But I didn't go through and do that stuff yet because I figured this was more like we currently had that problem. It was in there as ARIA label, it was being ignored. So it was never accessible. And so I didn't make it worse, but we should probably create an issue now that I have a bit of a plan for how to make it better.
Okay. I do need to add, I haven't linked up my Slack to that OLF Slack yet, so I will do that and then I can check the links you sent me, and I'll create an issue.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
And then, yeah, I think that pretty much covers everything that I was working on. Yeah, I do have there. So there's that DMS issue that would be fun to look at some point, but I don't know where that falls into priority or if it's more important to start looking at the ZFL stuff right away. So let me know what I should do after my next call, and I will do
Yeah.
that. I did link the copyright vocabulary issue to the ZFL issue where it's like translate all the vocabularies because that one essentially required the same thing of moving the labels of the vocabulary items from just using what's stored in the database to using something from the translation file. So that's the copyright one is basically a special case of this overarching ZFL one.
Okay, so maybe it makes sense to do those two in tandem. I will say that I 126
There's a
was
bunch of
ori
them. Yeah.
yeah, this was originally the priority per Tara and Deborah, but I guess this 159 and 160 are more pressing. I think
Well,
that if we What's that?
I'll just do them in that order then.
All right. Do you want me to assign? I think that 159 is a blocker for 160. Or no, sorry, is blocked by. I guess 160 is a blocker for 159. So maybe I'll sign this one if you don't mind taking a stab. And I think Kurt already has his ZFL ticket assigned. We do need to start dipping our toes into ZFL stuff. So I thank you for both of you like shifting gears a little bit when you are ready. But
Of course. I don't
Just
want to
out of
only do pro stuff forever.
curiosity, is Giannis planning to come back at some point? Or what's the plan for that?
We're just discussing this at the moment, whether there is enough new stuff on the docket that we feel like we can bring it back for a little bit.
I see.
So we the f financial stuff that we talked about in Stockholm is a little, we have longer runway than we did in Stockholm, which is great. So we're just trying to figure out like is there also enough new work that it would that we feel like we can commit, because it's hard to do it just for a month, so you kind of have to feel like you have to commit for a little bit of time.
Yeah.
So we are chatting about it.
Okay, I was just curious.
Yeah.
That's encouraging.
Yes. Very encouraging.
Well, Jason, I know you have a 10 o'clock. Thank you all. And let me know, as things you sort through these things, or if you have any questions. I'm sorely in need of Deborah showing me how to test things in ZFL, so I'm not really sure if Tara might have had that crash course already. But we'll work to QA and when it's time. So
Oh,
work
on that
together.
note, how do we test things at NFL? Like, or what do we target? Are we doing all this in the 118 branch then? Or are we going to be starting the process now of bringing ZFL up to 119 so that we can use the same code base, which means, of course, getting the SLNP test systems running happily with what we did for Trove.
I suspect that this would be a beneficial conversation to have with Jakob. I don't know what Kurt, like what I know you worked on a ZFL tickets in the mix of this Trove stuff. Like, were you still just working on the 118 branch?
Yeah, it was just 118. We didn't try to harmonize it at that point.
Did you forward port it to master so that we have it around?
Trying to think what happened there. Can't remember what he did for it. I feel like it was very ZFL specific. Like it wasn't, but
Oh.
I need to refresh my memory of what exactly we did. So
Well, it
I
would
can't
still
remember.
suck if we lost the ZFL specific fix when we moved them to 119 later.
Yeah.
Okay,
Okay, so
to be
I'll assume for
continued.
now, yeah, I'll do it on the 118 branch and then try to forward port things to 119 and
I kind of feel like I might have done it in master and then ported it back, but I'm just, I don't know, I don't have the brain for it, so I'll go look and see what I did, just so I'm not lying to you.
But more importantly, just so long as we have keep track of it so that we don't
Yeah.
inadvertently, because that you found one that happened to, possibly one that I did, where it was on a branch and then not kept up
No,
with
that was my fault. That was the issue with the proceeding preceded by whatever. And the crazy part is that I actually had a message from you in DMs about reminding me about it, and I somehow lost it, and then I found it later after I'd fixed it. So, yeah. So, but yeah.
Yeah, it happens. Well, and I recall that we did that fix for Minitex like sort of on the fly, because they sort of like raised an issue with Lynn about that. I think we did that like sort of as a crash course, like right before Christmas break. So it was probably,
It was something to that effect, but
yeah.
Why being in a hurry just doesn't save time, it just costs time later. See
Right.
you guys.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bye.